The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
It's a happy coincidence for me that it's a Dharma Talk night, and it's also the 49th day since the passing of Susan Ryoko Wetzel, who some of you were on earlier. We did a memorial service for her. And that's partly why I feel senior too, when your friends are dying, not because there's a plague, but just because you're old enough. And there are some people in the Zendo who remember her quite well, and they're also, like me, very senior. She was a relatively early member of the Zendo during her, but her presence was extremely vivid. I know that we met sometime before we did Jukai together, but when we did Jukai, which I think was 1997, something like that, so around a quarter of a century, let's put it that way. I told this story last year. I gave a Dharma talk a year ago on Dharma friends as being part of the Dharma treasure. And I mentioned this story in there, and I'm going to repeat it now with a little extra thing I found out just a few weeks ago. So she and I did Jukai together, and one word to describe her perhaps was curmudgeon. And she could be quite sharp about things. And during Jukai, there were lots of opportunities for her curmudgeonly behavior to come out, as we would snark about each other, about other people in the group, occasionally about Roshi, but mostly about sewing the damn raucouses, because sewing was not something she did, and sewing was something I did because my father was in the rag business, so I learned how to sew when I was like 4 years old, helping him put buttons on things. And for her, this was just like completely ridiculous. And at the end of our Jukai period, we had received our Dharma names, we had taken on the precepts, and we had one last meeting as a group. This was back in the apartment on Washington Place. And Roshi said, "Now, pick up your raucousus." This isn't the raucousu back then. I lost that one, don't ask. Attentive Zen student. Hint, don't have a silk bag for your raucousu and wear a down jacket with nylon down jacket in winter and carry it under your arm, because you won't know when it disappears. So she said, "Look at your raucousus and think how this represents your mind as it is now." And I looked at mine, and Ryoko looked at hers, and we looked at each other's, and hers, there wasn't a single right angle in the entire thing. It was just unbelievable. And mine, every angle was perfectly 90 degrees, but the tension in the stitch work was just unbearable to look at. And we were like, okay, we got our work cut out for us. And I saw her raucousu for the first time in a really long time when her siblings, her family, had a memorial for her a few weeks ago. And with her ashes, they set out her raucousu. And so I actually got to see the raucousu I've been talking about for 25 years. And sure enough, there isn't a single right angle, but there's a billowiness to it that I've never seen in anyone else's raucousu. There was a lightness to it that, I mean, it was almost a quilt. And I just thought, yeah, I don't know if billowy, soft comforter is what I would have thought of her 25 years ago. But it's kind of who she was on her way to becoming. And we spent a lot of time talking about our Zen practice a few years after. She lived in Bayside, Queens, and I don't drive a car, and there's no way to get there easily without a car. And so I'd never been to her home. And for some reason, finally, I did go to her home and I walked in and there were rocks everywhere. Crystals, other stuff, weird looking stuff, just rocks, which completely shocked me because I was an insane rock collector when I was a teenager, but I gave it up as one gives up one's teenage things when one doesn't have the money to go buy rocks and you can't go rock hunting and you've got other things on your mind. But she had all these rocks and I said, where did you get all these rocks? She goes, I go to rock shows. And I was like, take me. And we've been to 3 rock shows every year since then, until COVID interrupted. The only one we missed was the summer one, which at that point we would go to this one. She would drive, because I couldn't drive, up in Springfield, Massachusetts. So it was like 6 hours of driving to get to this rock show at the Eastern States Exposition. We'd spend the day hunting for rocks. And she stepped in a rabbit hole the night before and sprained her ankle and couldn't go and made me go. I had to take the train to Springfield and I had to call her from there to tell her, send her pictures of what I was seeing. And these trips were completely un-Zen-like. It was a full day devoted to avarice and gluttony. It was just attachment. And how did you know that a rock was the right rock? Well, we developed a way to test. If you saw a rock and you wanted to pounce on it, you would sort of walk away, turn. And if 10 feet or so from the table, you were like, I hope no one else sees that rock before. You'd know that's your rock. You know? We'd come with wads of cash. And there was always a diner we would go to on the way back. And the lid was off. I usually had like mozzarella sticks, not to share, a plate of 12 to myself, grilled cheese sandwich, French fries, black and white cookie. And that was nothing compared to the feast that she would have. And yet going there and coming back, most of our conversation when our parents started getting elderly, a lot of our conversation was about that. But other than that, it was about Dharma in one spiritual form or another. And she was incredibly, she was a lawyer, mind like a steel trap, had vast amounts of quotes in various languages, including Latin and Greek, that she would pull out. She would tell me stories about Hasidic masters. And it's just like, I thought that was my job. And one of the things that always came up every trip for a lot of contemplation and discussion, time swiftly passes by and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken, awaken. And, so we took heed, but not on that day. And part of that day was just, you know, I guess it's a kind of Lenten thing, you know, just let it all go because we're going to get back to it. 4 years ago, during COVID, just before COVID, just after, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. And this was at the same time her father had recently died of lung cancer and her mom was now starting to have issues with dementia, was in assisted living, and it was a very, very difficult time. And then she had breast cancer. Now, she had spent her working career as a, there's no clock. I need a clock, because I could go on a very long time. Thank you. she was a public defender. I met a lot of her friends from law school and from her early days as a lawyer in New York, and she could have gone on to become a judge. She could have gone on to become someone who earned a lot of money, and she chose to become a public defender. When she retired from public defending, it was partly because she was burned out, but and she shared that with the Zendo. She brought members of the Zendo to sit in night court with her sometimes as an opportunity to practice bearing witness in very arduous circumstances. When she did finally decide to retire, it's because she had a client who was accused of murder and, if convicted, would be sentenced to life in prison. And she got to know him and his extended family very well, and he was innocent, and she proved it, and he got off. And and she said, well, I've saved a life. It's not going to get better than that. And she thought maybe now it was time to have some time for herself. And that's kind of when COVID happened and the cancer happened. No, there were a few years where she went to work for, she still had to work for a time, and she went to work for friends who were actually judges. But as her time to be able to afford to retire approached, that's when all this stuff happened. She had imagined for herself a retirement of coming to the Zendo several times a week, returning to koan practice, which she had drifted away from, of getting a dog, of spending as much time as she wanted visiting Jones Beach or some other shoreline where she could just walk with the dog and look out at the water and the horizon and think about her practice. And that was her intention. And then, you know, other stuff happened. So when she recurred with the breast cancer, and again, my sense of time is off, sometime after COVID, sometime before her mother got towards the end, but I can't remember when, she realized that there was a likelihood that she would not survive her cancer. She had been looking forward to her retirement. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I got it. Is that okay? Yeah. Her retirement plan, but now she had recurrent breast cancer and it was very difficult to treat. And so she was in clinical trials and she was in the maw of the medical system. But she was really very determined and she was doing well on the third clinical trial until blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. When she got the diagnosis, we were talking about how she would approach it. And one of the things we talked about that she already knew she didn't need me to tell her was this medieval Jewish tradition that rabbis who would leave what have been referred to as ethical wills, that they might not have a lot of property to dispense with, but they had a lot of wisdom perhaps to dispense with, and they would write their wisdom down to pass on to the next generation. And so she started this, and all these flaps were, I thought, oh, I'll find something in here for a Dharma talk. Then I realized she's giving you the Dharma talk. I'm not going to read all of these things, but what she did in her exquisite lawyerly handwriting was write out important things to her in terms of spiritual practice, her spiritual practice. It's very varied, though I'd say about half of it is Zen. The other half is pop stars, Latin philosophers, Roman philosophers, you name it. The first one she put in, and I think this was aspirational for this book and for everything that was to come. You ask what progress, this is from Hecato, who is a Roman philosopher. You ask what progress I have made. I have begun to be a friend to myself. And then Dogen at the bottom of the first page. So this is, I'm not going to read everything. Do not think you will necessarily be aware of your own enlightenment. So, you know. So I thought I would go through here and like find one or two things that would be a good theme for a Dharma talk. And then I realized this is her Dharma talk and I'm just here to sort of like throw some of it at you. And if anyone ever wants to look at this, I'd be happy to share it. Something from the Talmud. A rabbi whose congregation does not want to drive him out of town isn't a rabbi. Anyone who's a lawyer whose Zendo doesn't want to drive her out of town isn't a lawyer. And she really, clarity was her biggest feature, I think. The shepherd who makes so pretty a picture carrying home the lamb is only carrying it home for dinner. Robert Louis Stevenson. But then she starts, Thomas Merton. Life is a gift I am glad of. If I had never been born, I would never have had friends to be loved by and to love, never have seen new countries, and as for what I may have suffered, it is inconsequential and indeed part of the great good which life has been and will, I hope, continue to be. Poet James Langenbach. Our capacity to be overwhelmed by the beautiful survives unlike beauty amidst the harshest distractions. The last time I saw her in person, we spoke on the phone a number of times, but she was in Memorial, had just been diagnosed with a brain met, but was totally fine, felt fine. It was small, it was responding to radiation. And she started talking about why she didn't want to die, because the world was so wonderful. So we talked about this and what it means to have that much attachment. And we started noodling around the four vows, that the first vow, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Well, that's kind of how she lived her life. That was what she did. And the second vow, desires are infinite, are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Well, that's where she was. And we never thought of the four vows as sort of like a barometer for where you are in your practice. And the question kind of was for us that we talked about, could she get to vow three? Could she get to vow four by the time she passed away? I don't know where she was the last few days, but I think she was on to number three the last time I spoke to her on the phone, which is a few days before she passed away. Apparently, I think she must have been part of the New York Haiku Kai for a summer, because there's a bunch of haikus from that group. Some of you may remember Dennis Ryoto Davidson, scattered in the shrubs unceremoniously, the poison ivy. Sri Nasargata Maharaj, abiding in your own being is holy company. Ryokan, playing ball with the village children this warm, misty spring day, no one wants it to end. Jean Yuketsu Carlamusto, I told her you'd be in here. Where is she? I know she's listening. This dog knows everything, but that differs substantially from what he cares about. Teach me to live that I may dread the grave as little as my bed. I don't know that she got there, but I hope she did. Refused at the inn, but I took this unkindness as a gracious act. Under the hazy evening moon, I slept among blossoms. Isa, all the time I pray to Buddha, I keep on killing mosquitoes. So there's a lot here. I wasn't sure how long I'd start talking, before I got to the book. A lot about her, about illness, clearly her working through what was happening. Nothing in the voice of the cicada intimates how soon it will die, Basho. There's a long Proust that I'll spare you, but you should look it up. Hakuin, how I would like people to hear the sound of the snow falling through the deepest, deepening night. What's interesting on the last page, so every page, it's only written on one side. Maybe because she was like, you know, let's be reasonable here. But on the last page, it's the only intimation that, like, she wasn't done until she was done, because on the last page, she writes on the facing page. Rilke, believe in a love that is being stored up for you like an inheritance. And have faith that in this love there is there is a strength and a blessing so large that you can travel as far as you wish without having to step outside it. And the last one with an exclamation point, Jakushu Kwam, and I saw this and I thought, oh, she was like, she threw that in there knowing I would get to the last page. Please enjoy your only life. Yeah. The last one is from a book, I guess, called Haiku Humor. And I'll finish with this one. One umbrella, the person more in love gets wet. And anybody who knew her, you know, she was the one who would get wet.